Hippity hop,
hopping down the trail.
Hippity hop,
hopping down the trail.
Need a beat of cottontail. Hippity hopping, hopping down the trail.
Oh, oh, what a smart little bunny.
Da, 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 da.
He's the king of Rabbit Town.
Look at Peter Cottontail
hopping down the bunny trail.
Hippity hopping on his merry way.
Peter Cottontail. He's the king of Bunnyland. Cause his eyes are shiny and he can spot the wolf a mile away. When the others go for clover and the big bad wolf appears,
and we are the Nonprofits. I'm your host, Dennis Loubet, along with Matt Dillahunty,
hello,
Russell Glasser, Beth Presswood, and we're coming to you live, magically, on the 16th of April, 2011, from the Dillahunty International Studios in the Mystic Oak Tree in Austin, Texas. The music you heard was Peter Cottontail, and it will chase all the goblins away. This show was sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization run by mighty wizards for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. You can learn more by clicking your heels together three times and calling their voicemail at 512-371-2911, or closing your eyes and clapping your hands and visiting their website at www.atheist-community.org. The nonprofit is brought to you by Magical Fairies every Saturday from 2 to 3 o'clock Central Time. To participate in the show, you only have to rub the lamp and make a wish and follow the directions found at www.nonprofitsradio.com to join their mystical chat room circle. So sit back, trust everything we tell you, and you too can be a mighty wizard with magical powers and wealth undreamed of. Just send us your credit card number.
It's true. I tried the program and it works. Tell us more about this amazing wizard power.
Advertised results are not indicative of all respondents.
Yes. Please do not send us your credit card numbers.
Yeah. Far too ethical to be the rich evangelist for atheism. But we were trying to think of music to actually use today. And, of course, next Sunday is Easter, that wonderful pagan fertility festival that has been co-opted by a zombie religious cult.
Where they force rabbits to lay eggs. It's awful.
It's terrible. And then they paint them and hide them and roll them around and make kids try and find them. And it's just...
Think of the fetuses.
It's just horrible.
When people do that, what does that have to do with chocolate?
There you go.
It's a good point.
I just know this is chocolate week.
It's all about chocolate
holiday. The other thing that's happening this coming weekend, in addition to Easter, and not by coincidence, is the American Atheist National Convention in Des Moines, Iowa. And we've already talked about it and read the list of speakers. And what I'd like to mention quickly is stuff that Dave Silverman told me about, which is that the registration is currently closed. They have room for about 850 or so. They're closing in on 700. So they have drawn a line, and they'll be selling day passes at the door. So if you're not already registered, there's still space available, but they're not taking registrations online anymore. You just need to kind of show up and pay, I think it's like $79 for a day or $179 for the weekend type thing. And hey, you know, if you're trying to figure out what day you really need to go, I'm speaking on Sunday, so...
All right.
You should probably buy tickets for Saturday when the important people will be talking. Christopher Hitchens was, of course, supposed to be the headliner there. I know that he's, of course, ill and seeking treatment. The next word that I got was that he was going to be there via Skype. I'm now hearing that there's going to be a letter sent along from him. So clearly he's not doing particularly well. And you know, our thoughts will clearly be with him, and we wish him all the best, and we also understand that wishing him the best is completely useless,
yes,
but a kind gesture.
We're
nonetheless
frustrated that our best intents are worth nothing really at this point.
So, I'm actually getting there Thursday afternoon and going to the speaker's dinner Thursday. I'll be around for pretty much the whole thing. Still have no idea. Well, I have an idea of what I'm talking about, but I have not finished with my presentation. So I'll be scrambling on that this week, mostly for a bit of kind of fun. But it'll probably get preachy because that's me. What's everybody else doing?
I'm starting a new job on Monday.
Whoa.
I saw that post. Cool. Congratulations.
I tend not to tell people that when I'm out of work because it's embarrassing. But then when I have a job again, I let you know that I haven't been working for over a month.
I had no idea. I thought you were transitioning directly from one job to another.
And all our millionaire listeners are going, I could have hired him.
Yeah, I guess next time I should try putting the call out. But when I try it on Facebook and I say Java Enterprise Programmer looking for work, people just go, what?
They zone out at Java. Yes.
But it is going to be my first full-time with benefits job in 10 years.
Sweet.
So. I'm
outstanding.
Pleased about that.
Congratulations.
Are you doing any, like, I know you were playing around with Android development on your own. Are you doing any of that with the
job? During the interview, I showed off the program I was working on and said, I got my Android a month ago, and this is what I'm doing now. And I think that helped. So I went to a thing in downtown where it's mandatory for some people who are collecting unemployment, which I didn't get around to go to these classes that teach you how to interview. And just about everything the guy said I thought was wrong, which was basically keep your head down, say what you think the company wants to hear, don't say anything controversial. And I thought, if I were to go into a programming interview like that, they would think this guy doesn't have an original thought in his head, and I'm going to have to micromanage the hell out of him.
And your people skills are clearly lacking if you're sitting there with your head down, just, yes, sir, I want this to make this the best company it can be, and I'm
right,
really
yes,
looking forward to
I
the opportunity.
Parrot their mission statement back to them. I mean,
on the other hand,
that's not an interview,
off.
That's supplication. I mean, God.
On the other hand, you know, if we're choosing whether to take advice from somebody whose only job is to tell other people how to get jobs,
yeah.
or somebody who just admitted that in 10 years they haven't had a full-time job with benefits, I think I'm going to a third party. And on that front, I'm new to the whole Android scene as well. I finally have an Uber phone, which I've had a love-hate relationship
cool.
with.
I just have a love relationship with mine.
Well, it turned out I originally got the Evo, and we were on Sprint, and our house is in a dead zone for Sprint. So we took them back, and now I've got a Thunderbolt, and I'm on Verizon. But Verizon hasn't rolled out their 4G in Austin. And so, I don't know. It's all about battery lives and rooting and other stuff. And oh wait,
well, it's certainly colorful.
I love my Fascinate. I love getting Facebook all the time on my phone. I love Angry Birds. I'm just in love with my phone.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Tech Talk Hour.
Yeah.
I have an iPhone, you heathens.
Infidel, get thee hence.
Yeah. The irony, well, I won't go into the whole Mac thing or whatever. So, yeah, we've completely blown the first few minutes by talking about our phones and other stuff that nobody cares about.
That's right.
I will say, though, that if you're in the market.
Awful little secret, we're all nerds. Sorry to disillusion you.
My phone does not believe in God.
Neither does mine. Outstanding.
I haven't asked mine.
Okay. Yeah. So, we're relevant now.
But it also doesn't not believe. Oh, wait.
It is a passive atheist.
That's all
atheist.
It takes. Yes, yes. It's a weak atheist, definitely.
Well, I needed something that was actually going to be useful to me, especially with the amount of traveling that I've, you know, got scheduled and wedding plans and other stuff. So hey, this is like a show with a bunch of atheists, and so let's talk about stuff relevant to that. Who's got a news item to start with?
Well, I have a God, but it doesn't use AT&T, so I suppose. Oh, wait, never mind. Go ahead.
I'd like to go ahead and start with this Feringula post about what's happening in Tennessee. where Tennessee legislators are debating the addition of creationism to their science curriculum, and apparently they've run out of reasonable excuses, so Redumlikin, aha, PZ, Frank nicely dragged in the corpse of Albert Einstein, stuck his hand up his bony thorax, and rattled his jawbone to make a speech.
Yep.
I think that if there's one thing that everyone in this room would agree on, that would be that Albert Einstein was a critical thinker. He was a scientist. I think that we could probably agree that Albert Einstein was smarter than any science teachers in our high schools or colleges. And Albert Einstein said that a little knowledge would turn your head toward atheism, while a broader knowledge would turn your head toward Christianity.
I have a problem with that.
Which is?
Einstein didn't say that.
He's a Jew.
Yeah. Even though there's that quote that, I mean, Ray Comfort has Einstein as his icon, which I think is incredibly arrogant.
No, I just think it's absolutely hilarious.
Yes. I mean, you might as well as attribute it to Gandhi. I mean.
Right.
I like your Christ, but not your Christians.
Yeah. That's right. But yes, Einstein, to the extent that he was religious at all, was a Jew. And also, I noticed something else that this legislator said. The thing in this quote that first caught my eye was when he said he was a scientist, and I think we could agree that Albert Einstein was smarter than any of our science teachers in our high schools or college.
I can't agree with that.
How the fuck do you know?
First of all, smarter is one of those nebulous weasel terms.
Yeah, there are a lot of axes.
You know, was his IQ higher? Was he more creative? Was he more intuitive? Was he more, you know?
Did he do better in first grade math?
Yeah.
Yeah, if he was such a genius, why was he a frickin', what was he, a
patent clerk?
Patent clerk, yeah. I mean,
it was so he could steal other people's ideas on.
Oh,
that's it. No, you know, but it's this general pattern that I notice when creationists are talking a lot, where they tend to, like, exaggerate the importance of any one person that they happen to be quoting.
So
like, I used to listen to D. James Kennedy before he thankfully died, and he would, whenever he was making an argument from authority, you could tell because he was saying, so-and-so was the best whatever he was in the world.
Great.
And I mean, I like and respect what Einstein did and think he's a good role model, but I would never say anything so fawning about him or Richard Dawkins or anyone like that.
Yeah, and I've actually been asked bluntly before when they bring up the Einstein. Or no, actually, it wasn't Einstein, and it was Newton. Somebody, you know, when I was pointing out that, sure, Newton, brilliant scientist, innovator, cool. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, not very bright when it came to matters of theology.
Incredible religious flake.
I don't completely.
He wasn't bright. He was just wrong.
No, he bought into some things that
hook, line, sinker.
Were pretty, you know, I mean, he had a fondness for, you know, alchemy and things like that and looking for the mysticism. And I don't fault him for that because that was you know, kind of the thinking of the time.
Yeah, the science of the day.
So somebody asked me point blank, well, do you think you're smarter than Isaac Newton? And I said, on that subject, yeah. I mean,
I'm certainly better informed.
I'm more knowledgeable than Isaac Newton. I have the benefit of 400 years of those giants that he was talking about.
Right.
Absolutely.
Him included.
A lot of people have stood on his shoulders since he was around.
Thank you, Isaac.
Woot. Good job. Now, do I think I'm, you know, more intelligent or creative or inventive? No. But I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? But when you start saying that, I think we can all agree that Einstein was smarter than all of the science teachers in colleges and high schools today, no, we can't all agree on that.
Anyway, Einstein didn't say that, did he?
No.
No,
of course not.
Of course not.
Not even close.
As a matter of fact...
They know who?
Yes, they do, and even the person who said that didn't actually say that, but...
of course. Classic for Christian quote mining.
Well, I mean, it's another case of a quote mine where it didn't quite sound good enough, and so they tweaked it.
Yeah.
But give me a... give me you some. Can, you do can something find else it. While I hunt
sure.
it down.
These people are filth.
So it's.
Oh wait, I found it.
Okay.
Francis Bacon.
Ah, okay.
Francis Bacon said, "A little philosophy inclineth man's mind to atheism, but depth in philosophy bringeth men's mind around about to religion." But it doesn't say Christianity.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. So, they really massaged that
so
one.
So he got the wrong person.
Well, first
and
of all,
then he got the wrong quote.
The original quote had to do with an assessment of philosophy and not necessarily knowledge, so they changed that.
Yes.
And then it was religion, and they changed it to Christianity. And then they changed Francis Bacon to Albert Einstein. Okay.
Typical.
And the thing is, they don't care. I mean,
no,
I wouldn't
shit.
Accuse this one legislator of having personally been aware of the original quote and tinkered around with it to suit his needs.
Nah, if he uses it, he's responsible for it.
People,
I say fuck him.
But people pass these quotes along, and they make, like, one tiny change each way. I mean, it's a game of telephone. But the real distinction with these type of conservative religious legislators is they aren't in the habit of sourcing stuff.
No, they never question anything, apparently.
And they don't care. Hey, here's somebody who is really smart, and you've just offered me what is supposed to be a quote from them that agrees with what I already believe.
Serves my purposes.
So I'm going to run with it.
I'm there.
I mean, clearly, he thinks he's as smart as Einstein, while demonstrating that he's
dumb
not.
As a stick.
Right. And speaking of sourcing stuff, which we do here, thinkprogress.org, which is a liberal site, but it has a video of the guy saying
it. Ah, okay.
So,
good.
You know, unless they're really good at forgery.
Yeah. Man. Well, it's like what the Darwin quote where he's talking about the development
eye.
Of the eye.
Yeah.
And he starts the rhetorical sequence with, you know, it seems
that
it would be impossible for it to develop with, you know, without intelligent guidance.
I agree,
but
and I'm running with that.
That's right. But then the rest of the paragraph is all about, but here's how it evolves through natural processes.
I love it when people call in with that quote. Because what I always say is, go on, read the rest.
what do you mean the rest? That's where my quote ends. I found it on creationism.com or whatever.
Yep. What do you mean the rest? Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, this is pretty typical. The thing that I find kind of... I mean, okay, so you've got a quote that's been misquoted and then missourced and then misrepresented as an appeal to an authority that would still be a fallacious appeal to authority because Einstein has no recognized expertise in matters of religion. Right. And then it's put out forth as part of a political statement in a country that is supposed to be secular.
Secular. Right. How many ways can this be questionable?
I just...
Plus,
wow.
Even if that was an Albert Einstein quote, it's not an argument. I mean, the quote, even if it had been used correctly, is just basically saying, if you're not a Christian, then you're dumb.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. It's like those jokes where the joke can really... You can plug in a group you like and a group you hate at the end. You know, these are atheist kittens. Yesterday they were atheist kittens, but today they're Christians because their eyes are open. You can flip it around. You can make it Democrat and Republican. You can make it big Indian
right.
and little Indian Lilliput. Whatever.
Yeah, one of the classics of that from my time in the military is, and it's, of course, a gender bias, but there's a sailor and a marine are in the head at the urinal, and the marine gets done and goes over and washes his hands, and the sailor just starts marching out the door, and the marine looks at the sailor and says, you know, in a Marine Corps, they teach us to wash our hands after we piss. And the sailor says, yeah, in the Navy, they teach us not to piss on our hands.
Yep.
So.
Yes.
Classic.
And you could
Classic.
Just as easily reverse the roles. In
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah. And have. I've heard it. And seen it written in any number of ways.
And if you're willing to make up quotes by Albert Einstein, then of course you can stick in any groups you want there.
Yep.
Sure. Like David Barton.
I just love it. Anyway, at ironchariots.wiki.ironchariots.org, the wiki that I desperately need to find time to update all of the software on and take care of the forums and stuff. And I apologize. I'd love to actually turn it over to somebody with time who, you know, I would trust as an admin, but I haven't found the right person or the time to actually do it. You'll find a page there about Einstein with sourced quotes. And the interesting thing is that I didn't get to talk to Rick about this when he called in. He includes some Einstein quotes, some of which are accurate,
mm-hmm.
that portray a particular image of his view on religion.
Right.
And I have quotes on Iron Chariots that are accurate, that portray a different view of his, well, what he has to say about religion. And this is an error that comes up all the time. And I like mentioning this because I'm a prime example. There are things that Einstein said at different points in his life,
yes.
that reflect different views.
Mm-hmm. Views change.
It is incorrect to sum up a man's lifetime where their views change and progress and mature, and use their earliest statements as if they're indicative. I think it's better to use their later statements with some exceptions.
Yeah.
But it's best to say that, look, this person's views don't really always consistently reflect what you think they do. I mean, I don't want to get in the situation of, well, you know, Anthony Flew changed his mind.
I was going to say that. Yeah, that's the thing that springs to mind.
Obviously, we have extenuating circumstances there, which, by the way, he already acknowledged prior to his death. But you could go back and find quotes from me advocating that Jesus is Lord. Clearly, mm-hmm. you can find other quotes that would advocate the opposite. I'll be happy to give them to you at any point.
So, in other words, you're just really deep cover right now, right?
Yeah. And now, when I'm 80, assuming, you know, somebody doesn't kill me before then or I don't die of something silly, I'm not going to rule out the possibility that I won't lose my mind and adhere to some religion. And I won't also rule out the possibility that I become convinced. I don't see that that's likely, and I currently have no reason to think that's even remotely plausible. But, you know, in the everything's possible category, there it is. Now, when people look back on my life, what's going to be the assessment of my opinion? I hope the assessment is, it doesn't fucking matter. Anybody who says, well, Matt Dillahunty said, you know, blah, blah, stop. Take the arguments and the evidence as the merits, not the individual who speaks them, right. Because it doesn't matter. And I find it particularly ironic that Christians in particular are fond of reaching out for Einstein and stuff, when you would think Einstein was the smartest scientist who ever lived, and he said this. Well, you would think that if your beliefs were true and you were comfortable in them, that you should just be able to say, Jesus is God, and he said this.
Right.
And that's as far as you'd ever need to go.
Yeah, you don't need to go there. And what the heck? Why are they going to Einstein? Don't these kind of people think that intelligent people are all, too elitist for us, you know?
Well, until they agree with them.
Yeah, until they agree with them.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that they don't like, or the reason that they don't quote smart people or more generally is because most of them think they're wrong.
That's right. Smart people don't usually agree with them.
The reason they highlight the especially smart people who do happen to agree with them or are wrongly quoted as agreeing,
agreeing with them
is because it's so unusual.
Yeah. Hey, we couldn't find any other living scientists who would get up here and, you know, with any.
Now, I'm curious.
Reputation.
How much quote mining do we find in the atheist community?
Ooh, I wouldn't say that it doesn't happen.
It doesn't exist at all, no.
No, I'm saying I would not say that.
Right. That's
I think that you're going to find quote mining anywhere, and you're going to find errors
mm-hmm.
Almost any time somebody's advocating a position. Because I am human, And as skeptical as I am and as rigorous as I am in critical thinking, there are occasions where someone, for example, Beth, has earned my trust and I consider them a reliable source. So when she tells me something, unless it's just outrageous, I'm probably going to accept tentatively that she's telling me something correct. And I've done this before where I've relied on something somebody said or a news story, and then we go back later and find out, no, that was a parody. Or...
Right.
You remember just a few weeks ago, I was caught right in the middle of a show loudly reading something that was infuriating me, and it turned out to be a joke right there in the show.
Yeah, wasn't it some political statement?
Yeah,
from...
something like that. And it was like, it sounds plausible, but then we can't do that.
The second you think you're immune from being duped,
you'll step into it.
Is when you're going to be most likely to be duped.
Yeah, when I was it that Ferengula story about the
except when you're not
the what was it? The bar trying to the bar that burned down from the lightning strike, and the Baptist church said, our God just I read that one and I went, oh, what a great story. And then I read the comments and somebody said, check Snopes and all that stuff. And I didn't. Yeah, it was all posed. So
but whereas our reaction is, oh, I feel so stupid for having done that, Christians will often double down when they find out about that. They'll say, like,
Let me give you an example that I mentioned once before while you guys dig up the next news bit. We've all fallen prey to something. You know, Snopes is a great resource and everything else.
Yeah.
But what Russell's talking about...
Snopes has actually planted a few stories that are especially ridiculous, and they say they're true when they're not, because they have a page that links to saying, did we fool you there? Because you shouldn't trust us either.
Either, right.
You should check out the source.
Authority.
So they have some deliberate plants.
Question authority.
Anyway, go on.
Well, I was not aware of that. And no, I'm not citing Snopes as the definitive authority on anything. But when Russell's talking about how Christians in particular seem to double down on this, during the run-up to Obama's election as president, I received email from a friend of mine, actually his wife, basically quoting Obama as saying that he was going to, change the national anthem and the national song and all this. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous stuff. And it turned out, when I read it, I was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I'm shocked. So I went and looked. And, of course, it was on Snopes and it was on several other sites. There was a guy who had written this as a parody of, and who knows if it was because of racist accusations of, we're putting the first black man in the White House, or just general, conservative liberal conflict. But so I sent out a response. She had emailed, of course, everybody on her email list. I sent out a response with links to the source that showed that this was debunked. And the response I got back was, no, I heard him say this. Okay. This is the problem with when you latch onto something.
Fucked up people.
Where your personal beliefs and your personal memories and perceptions of reality trump whatever evidence somebody can give you. You have lost. And I wrote back and was like, okay, I just sent you the citation of the guy who actually made this up, okay? And you're saying you heard him say it. Where did you hear him say it? Can you cite some source, or whatever? It turned into a huge blow-up that was unnecessary and turned into a little pissing match over stuff. But this type of thing happens, and
someone
people
was
have,
wrong on the internet.
Yeah. Usually I just sick Beth on him at that point. But people have talked about, for example, when Ray Comfort called into the show. And well, why didn't you hit this and this and this and this and this? Well, first of all, you can't. The apologists can spew more information in a minute than you can debunk in an hour, or yeah. properly debunk in an hour. But second of all, they were complaining. Well, there was a lot of interruption. And I realize that in this room, that happens a lot. We've tried different things. We've tried raising hands. You've got strong personalities that all have something to interject. And we just kind of go with it. And I'm mostly fine with it. But they were like, no, you guys, you interrupted Ray. Let me be clear. I'm open to criticism like that. And we have done it too much in the past. But I think that that's entirely invalid on that front in this particular instance. And it's because of the nature of the show, the time limit, and the nature of who I'm actually having a conversation with. What I've found in the years that I've been doing this show is that if you let them continue...
They never shut up.
Once they've started an argument based on a flawed premise,
right.
When they stop and you say, okay, let's go back to the beginning where you said, I can survive in outer space without any, external assistance, just naked. I reject that, and here's the problem with that. The answers that you get back are, I didn't say that. You're misrepresenting what I'm saying. You misunderstood what I said. Or on some occasions, okay, yes, but, and then a rephrasing of the exact same thing, and then 5 more minutes of them going down another path. Okay? So the easiest solution, and I don't care if people perceive it as rude, the easiest solution is to interrupt at the point where there's a disagreement, a point of contention, and say, okay, we need to stop here and clarify this or define this or something along those lines, because otherwise you're going to be building up to a big point when you've started out with something as absurd as I can live in outer space,
Right.
With no food or protection.
Right.
This is actually an important point in basic logic. In fact, there's a famous story about Bertrand Russell, who we know a lot as an atheist and the guy I was named after, but he was first and foremost a mathematician. And when he went in front of a crowd once and was lecturing and explained that if you start with a false premise, you can prove any conclusion. And one of the guys in the audience looked shocked and said, what, you're saying that if I tell you 2 + 2 = 5, then you can prove that you're the Pope? And Bertrand Russell says, sure. And then on the spot, he ad-libbed,
wow.
2 + 2 = 5, therefore 4 = 5, subtract 4 from both, or 3 from both sides, 1 = 2, the Pope and I are two people. But 2 = 1, so the Pope and I are one person, therefore I am the Pope. The difference in a theistic conversation would be that instead of everybody just laughing and the conversation ending, the theist would say, now that we've both agreed that I'm a Pope, let's go on, and I'll prove some other stuff.
Yeah. And so that's the reason why I and granted, I'm no fan of, oh, no, you said something wrong, so let's hammer it. It's a way of making sure that we don't waste precious time on the show on something.
Every time we're about the same thing.
And so, when you start an argument with a premise that's instantly rejected or flawed or whatever else, sometimes it's worth letting them get the whole argument out. Other times it's not. And one of the things that I'm concerned about is the prevalence of people who simply don't understand logical fallacies, logical arguments. If I allow an apologist to make a flawed argument, he gets all his points out right up to the conclusion, and then we go back to the thing that's wrong. If we're unable to come to some agreement that it's wrong, or if they re-spin that in a way or claim that I'm misrepresenting them or whatever else, then their entire argument's going to stand for those people.
Right. Good point.
If I go back and let's say...
interrupt them right then.
Yeah. If your first premise is the Bible is the word of God and literally true... therefore, whoa, wait a minute. By what right do you make that claim? Let's talk about this for a second, because this is a foundational point of disagreement.
Yeah, this is a big premise. You need to establish it.
And it's not easy. I finished watching finally the debate between Sam Harris and William Lane Craig at Notre Dame that happened on, I think, the 9th.
Yeah.
And there were people who posted videos of it and even posted them up to my Facebook where... William Lane Craig had offered his two contentions and then said, you'll notice that those are conditionals, and I will not be arguing for or against the existence of God because it has no bearing on them. And the person who heard him say that and made this video was like, what? That's absurd. And it's because they didn't quite see the details there. Craig was absolutely right. And by the way, not realizing that he was right and why he was right, offered up this red herring that allowed Craig's more subtle point to get through. And I'll tell you what the subtle point was, just for the people who haven't watched it yet. His two contentions are essentially, if there is a God, then objective morality is possible. And if there's not a God, objective morality is not possible. Now, here's the thing. The first half of each of those contentions combined make a true dichotomy. Either there is a God or there's not a God. Those are, in fact, the only two options. The second half of those two contentions make a true dichotomy. Either there is objective morality or there's not objective morality. However, when you combine them into two statements that are a union there, it gives the impression that you have stated simply two true dichotomies. Either there is a God and more objective morality is possible, or there's not a God and objective morality is not possible. Uh-huh. That is not, in fact, a true dichotomy. It is a rhetorical kind of trick, a way of phrasing right. things. Now,
you need to do your two-by-two grid.
Actually, the logical opposite of there is a God and there is objective morality is there is no God or there is no objective morality.
Right. The thing is, Craig wasn't being dishonest here. He understood that he had to defend his two contentions, and he went on to attempt to do that. But by stating it that way, you give the impression to the unaware and the people who already agree with you, by the way, that you've already made your case before you made it. Look, those are the only two possibilities. And so you've given the impression that you've made your case before you've actually made it. And now everything that he says, for the people who already agree with him, is a bunch of head nodding things. For the people who are in the middle are a bunch of, he's making his case, but, you know, I see that that's a dichotomy. And then there's a handful, or however many, maybe most, who knows, hopefully, I hope someday it's most, who are sitting there, they're going, you know, no, excuse me. And, you know, Sam Harris took some heat for not responding. I mean, Craig was there to do a debate, and Harris was right to call him out on his blog of doing this as a high school debate, because Craig would get up there and say, you'll notice that Dr. Harris didn't respond to this and this, and such, and blah, 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 and there you go. And so I'm happy to deal with those things in another debate, but today's debate is about this subject, right down to him rephrasing what the debate is mm-hmm. at the beginning. Harris did what he meant to do, and I think it kind of worked. I think he did what a lot of more people should try doing, which is he pretty much went there and stated his case. And the two of them essentially talked past each other most of the night.
Huh.
Harris made his case. Craig made his. Harris then went up and made his case again. Craig went up and made his case again and pointed out how Harris hadn't addressed this. Meanwhile, Harris is pointing out that Craig has misrepresented what Harris has said, et cetera. So it's one of the big problems with debates, and it's specifically with that format where I talk, you talk. There's no interaction between
the two. No interruption.
So basically it's a joint press conference. And in a joint press conference, I think Sam Harris did exactly what you should do in a joint press conference. It's the reason why when I agreed to debate at UMBC, I did not for a second want that format. I said from the beginning, I want us to be able to ask each other questions and have a real debate. That information wasn't relayed to Father Jacobsy.
Oh,
so he wasn't as big a fan of that format, as I find is the case for many others.
Of course not. It interrupts his pitch.
So the back and forth questions were left to a minimum. And what I did in that case was both attempt to address. I basically took the kind of almost the Craig role of I stated my case and I pointed out how his statements didn't, mm-hmm. you know, impact my case at all. But anyway, enough about that. We have another news item.
Yeah.
Do we?
Now the only one here who has any news items?
I'm afraid so.
Well, there's a Ten Commandments display that was rejected in Louisiana.
Oh, yeah. What about that?
Does that have the wrong Ten Commandments in it?
No. It's probably Rapides Parish Police Jury did something right this week. This is from Friendly Atheist, by the way. When they voted against putting the Ten Commandments in the parish courthouse, the motion failed Monday by a 6-3 vote. District Juror Oliver Ollie Overton said, "I'm comfortable with what we did. Like I said, when I was sworn in, I took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States and Louisiana. I will not make a decision to knowingly violate the law." District Juror Scott Perry said, I've lived by the Ten Commandments all my life, and I've taught them to my kids. I carry the Ten Commandments in my heart, but if I vote to ratify, I've broken the law.
Woohoo!
Why didn't you do that in your swamp people voice?
Oh, yeah. Because nobody would understand it.
Your what voice?
Swamp People. It's a show about alligator hunters in Louisiana Swamp.
Oh, boy.
And they have a delectable dialect that I imitate and just drive her nuts. So we got an example of some Christians who understand the law and are willing to uphold it. Good for them.
Wow.
Kudos all day long. However, District Juror Jamie Floyd said, "When they outlaw having a Bible, are we going to take a stand then? When they outlaw having a gun, are we going to take a stand then?" It's just shocking. They didn't outlaw having the Ten Commandments. They shot down legislation to plaster a divisive sectarian religious message up in a public area. They didn't outlaw your Bible. They didn't take away your gun. But I love the fact that you leapt right to, we need to take a stand. They're trying to take our gun. You can have your gun. Enjoy your gun. Pretty sure you can't bring your gun into the courthouse either. I'm pretty sure that even those of you with concealed carry permits, which do exist in states like Texas and Louisiana, et cetera, still would be in trouble if you walked into the courtroom with that weapon on your person. This isn't, you know, we understand there are places where some things don't belong. And the public courthouse is not a place for a divisive sectarian religious message with the stamped seal of approval of the elected officials.
Wow. Exaggerating for effect.
Do you mind if I get controversial for a minute?
Uh-oh.
Knock yourself out.
I want to talk abortion for a sec.
Oh, good, because I haven't talked about that enough this week.
I think, actually, I can't remember what triggered it. I think it was partly Ray Comfort and partly my blog post that has made us get a number of atheists who are anti-choice.
Yeah, I heard from quite a few of them after the conversation with Ray.
Right, writing to us. And I understand we don't speak for all atheists, and some of them don't agree. But here in this room, I think we're pretty much all agreed that it's an important legal right that needs to be upheld. Yes?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
With all the hesitation.
Sorry, I had turned my mic just, off yeah, so but as hell not yeah. to interrupt you, and then you asked me to chime in.
Something is going on, which I heard about on Rachel Maddow's podcast, that I hadn't noticed, but I had noticed that we were talking several times in the recent past about states passing sort of draconian anti-abortion laws that seem to kind of violate Roe versus Wade. Like imposing waiting periods, some of them as short as a month. So basically, as soon as you realize that you've missed one period, you are now no longer allowed to get an abortion because they're shortening the viability time, or they're declaring fetuses as having rights or stuff like that. Were you going to say something?
No, I'm just waiting.
Okay. No. clutching that microphone, ready to pounce.
These kind of things are in violation of Roe versus Wade, basically. They are states passing laws that say that they have the authority to do things that, according to the Supreme Court, they do not have the right to do. I mean, Roe versus Wade basically says that in the first trimester, you've got the right to do it no matter what. In the second trimester, it's up to discretion. In the third trimester, it's probably not okay, but there are exceptions. When the states do this, the only way to respond to this sort of behavior is to take them up before the Supreme Court and get that law declared unconstitutional. But there's a problem. Because Bush was elected for a second term, coming up on 8 years ago.
Uh-oh.
We've now got Justice Roberts and Justice Alito, and as far as anyone knows, they are the swing votes that would actually be able to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Right.
So, women's groups, abortion advocacy groups were talking, let me see, the National Organization for Women, I believe, is one of those groups that would be expected to bring this case up, but they can't do it right now because if they brought an abortion case, then that would give the Supreme Court the opportunity to actually outlaw it. Meanwhile, because they know that they can't do it, more and more states are piling onto this and just... setting up their own private, unconstitutional, in violation of the Supreme Court, anti-abortion laws in order to either force the issue to be overturned in the Supreme Court or make abortion effectively illegal because the states say that it is. I wish that people who said it doesn't matter who you vote for would take note of this case.
Right.
Yeah, there's a complete war on women and war on Roe v. Wade right now. There's been something like 916 laws passed in just the last couple months, abortion.
I believe it.
You know, 3-day waiting periods, having to go to anti-choice counseling centers, which is unconstitutional, just completely. It's crazy. And there are states. Mississippi has one abortion clinic. South Dakota has one abortion clinic, and they are always just hanging on to that one clinic. You know, South Dakota, there are no abortion doctors in South Dakota. They are all flown in for 1 day a week.
Right. In Wichita, Kansas, where Dr. Tiller was shot, they haven't had any providers anywhere near them for many years, and now this one doctor is trying to move in, and they're threatening her staff. I mean, like, you know, her secretary. They're saying, we know where you live, because they know that they can't intimidate this doctor, or she wouldn't have gone into abortion practice. And they're going after the underlings, you know, threatening to kill them.
Well, they went after her landlord and said, we are going to make this a big nuisance all the time if you don't tell her she can't do abortions at her office.
And apparently nobody's capable of doing anything about it.
No. Abortion is already pretty much illegal for many women.
Yeah.
In many states.
It kind of goes back to something Dennis and I were talking about before the show, something we've mentioned before, and that's this nonsense about Terry Jones, the pastor who burned the Quran, and there are people who are trying to blame him for the deaths that, you know, were resulted ostensibly from that.
No.
That's just not the case. What it is you have some unreasonable people who are willing to violate the law and threaten anybody who they don't like, don't agree with, and intimidate and use terrorist tactics to enforce their opinion in direct and violation of the law. Now, in the case of the Quran burning and the deaths, I equate that directly with the Danish cartoonists and the violence that came from that. It doesn't matter if every one of the cartoonists drew those cartoons knowing that this was a likely outcome.
Right.
Because what you're doing by prohibiting it is a censorship response to terrorism. And what these people are doing is saying, we don't like the law the way it is, and rather than working within the system to do this, we are going to make life miserable for anybody who doesn't follow our particular views. We won't really advocate bombing an abortion clinic, but we're not going to denounce the people who do or the people who kill an abortion doctor. What we're going to do instead is go to their landlords. We're going to go to their secretaries. We're going to make it impossible for them to do business because, damn it, this is our place. And if you don't like it, you can get the hell out.
That's right. We'll publish their names and addresses.
What we need is elected officials that are going to enforce the fucking law and go after all of these domestic terrorists because that's what they are,
mm-hmm.
who are attempting to enforce their own particular views onto people in violation of the law. That has to happen. And it's not. Terry Jones is doing something else, supposedly. But
right. I mean, regarding the worst thing you can say about Terry Jones, and I'm going to quote the great philosopher Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, great.
In the movie Last Action Hero. His sidekick
he's smarter
says,
than us.
He must be guilty of something. Yeah, he's guilty of acting like an asshole. If I arrest him, I have to arrest Congress.
Yep.
So they're now going to like put Muhammad on trial, as it did with the Quran. Now, of course,
kangaroo court.
Yeah, their kangaroo court. Hey, I wonder what the verdict's going to be.
Oh.
This is the church seeking out publicity, and the aspect that I do not directly relate it to, for example, the Danish cartoons and the other subjects we talked about, is that in this case, Terry Jones is operating within his First Amendment rights, and he has every right to do it. We need to protect his rights just as we would anybody else. However, he's also just being a douche. The cartoonists weren't necessarily being a douche. Terry Jones' goal isn't to show that Islam has within it an intolerant, violent sector. That's not his goal. His goal is, my God is way better than their God, and these guys are all just heathens who are worshiping a false god, and so I'm going to poke fun at them. And he has every right to do that, but he's being a douche by doing it, you know.
Yep.
Or an asshole, or dick, or whatever.
The distinction is a subtle one.
So my favorite headline of the week is one that Beth mm-hmm. caught, and it's from WND, which is "Fight Escalates Over Teacher Fired for Bible on Desk." Now, if that's not the most misleading headline I've ever seen.
Wow. Well, is it? What happened?
You don't remember when we talked about that teacher who got fired over a Bible on his desk? Maybe you'll know him better as the guy who was branding his students with crosses.
Pete's sake.
Now, granted, branding is a strong and inaccurate term. He was not, using a branding iron.
Right,
it was a
right,
Tesla
but
coil.
He was burning crosses in people's arms.
Yeah, he claims it was an X. Hey, that's a good defense.
I got fired for having a Bible on my desk. Oh, screw you,
To be fair, one of the real aspects of his termination was because he refused to remove the religious references from, his classroom and stuff. So it is kind of accurate. But when you hear that, you're like, wait a minute. Some teacher was fired for not removing a Bible from their desk?
Yeah, if that was the case, I'd be all like, don't do that.
Well, it's I could see where it would be reasonable to fire somebody for failing to follow school standards of
right.
not bringing your religious material and displaying it on your desk, because that's not what school's for. But when I read the headline, I was like, wow, how come I haven't heard about this? And then when I found out who it was, and in this case, we're talking about John Freshwater, is... the guy who used the little Tesla coil science
right.
experiment to.
So how does he justify ignoring, forgetting that little bit about?
Oh, but he's not. He's not. This is WND who wrote the headline.
So WorldNet Daily actually acknowledges this charge. They say one of the early allegations was that he branded students with a scientific machine called a Tesla, or I think they misspelled Tesla. Tesla coil that demonstrates electrical current. However, he said that he made only X marks. Yeah, because if he burned X marks, I mean, they've even got a picture right there in the article of a burned student's arm, and this, and they're treating it as an alleged allegation. What the hell, world?
So anyway, you know, I mean, when you talk about getting your sources, getting, you know, trying to find accurate sources, I'll let that stand on its own. What else have we got?
Over at Virginia Tech, which seems to be kind of a breeding ground of crazies. Sorry, no offense to Virginia Tech students. I'm sure most of you are very rational. But Virginia Tech police were called to the drill field Wednesday afternoon following a report of a student stabbing his own hand with a pen.
Surely he had to have a good reason to stab him. So was there a bug on his hand that he was trying to get rid of?
It's just very clumsy. Police were called at 1:19 p.m. by a 911 call from a witness at the scene. Alexander M. Huppert, a freshman university studies major, then assaulted an officer who approached to check his welfare, according to a police press release. Okay. After a short struggle with the officer and several witnesses, he was taken into custody.
I know I just stabbed myself with a pen, but don't you come near me or check on my well-being.
That doesn't hurt. The incident took place near a table promoting the local version of Ask an Atheist Day. The student group Freethinkers at Virginia Tech sponsored the table. Witnesses said Huppert stood near the table for nearly an hour. Approaching the table, Huppert borrowed a pen and drew a circle with a cross inside on the back of his hand. I haven't read this yet.
Oh.
Nicole Schrand, I can see where it's going, though.
Yeah.
Nicole Schrand, a senior psychology major, said Huppert then asked students at the table to stab him in the cross with the pen to prove to us God existed. They declined. We don't believe in assaulting people, said Schrand. We're against assaulting people. Huppert then asked for the pen back, a request Schrand and the other students declined. Seeing another pen, Huppert grabbed it and began stabbing himself in the back of the hand. If it had been a more streamlined pen, I would have expected it to go through, Schrand said.
Oh.
It reminds me of the Darwin Award, where the guy was like, you know, this glass is so strong that nobody can break through it, see? And he charged right at it.
Yeah. So he tried to give himself stigmata?
What was he trying to prove there? Maybe he thought that drawing the cross was giving him superpowers? Right off him somehow?
No, I think it was the target for his... He was trying to give himself stigmata, it looks... Sounds like.
I'm not sure. I think he was trying to...
That's weird.
I don't know. My guess, you draw a circle on your hand and put a cross in it. The guy could have been delusionally thinking that Jesus would protect him from actually having the pen penetrate if he did that.
Wow.
Or maybe it was, I'm going to take this pain and God's going to heal it right in front of you because my faith is... I don't know what
his thinking
was.
So prayer gives him Wolverine powers.
But my thing is...
Or I can jam a pen through my hand and not feel it or
this
something.
This is not in any way a problem of Christianity, except that this is what... religious ideas do to minds that are unstable.
Right. It provides structure of a sort.
So we've seen this before. We've seen the gross rationalizations of, you know, mothers who drown their kids, or another story that is up here about a woman who circumcised her kid.
Oh, man.
At home.
Right.
A 29-year-old Portland mom. Said she'd been inspired to circumcise her baby after reading the Old Testament,
right.
And decided to do it home. The bleeding wouldn't stop, so she tried to stitch it up. After 2 hours of uncontrolled bleeding, she decided she needed help and called 911 rather than continuing to just pray for the blood to stop. But this isn't
There's some disagreement among us about infant circumcision, but we both agree that whatever you think about it, it's a medical procedure.
Yes, at least.
You know, you don't give your infant open heart surgery.
Oh.
You don't do that shit.
Yeah, and I'm sure at some point we'll get back to the disagreement between us, but
okay.
For today, the point that I was making is that it's easy to say, hey, look, these are unstable people. These are you know, and they may have done these things through any medium, not just Christianity. And there's nothing about Christianity that necessarily leads one to take these actions, because you know, even those who do circumcise, you know, they don't tend to do it at home irresponsibly. However, stop and think for a second. If Christianity is true, then there is a God who exists, who purportedly cares about people, and who wants people to know him, love him, follow him, whatever your particular definition is. And down here on this pitiful planet is an individual who, in all sincerity, wants to believe and do what that God wants. And that sincere individual, whose beliefs and convictions are so strong, then takes a pen and jabs it into his hand. It is ridiculous to claim that Christianity causes this. I agree. This is a result of the individual being unstable. But the one thing that we can point out is that this individual who was unstable was not prevented from taking any action by this religious belief. And if your religious beliefs have this effect on unstable people, then either your God does not care at all about the mentally impaired, or he doesn't fucking exist. And this message, which is rather innocuous to some people, is clearly poisonous to others. And we would be much better off if we treated the mentally unstable responsibly and with, oh, I don't know, science, rather than myth and superstition. You don't get a pass. You don't get to say, well, that person was obviously crazy. You can't blame that on Christianity. You're right. That person was obviously crazy, and I can't blame it on Christianity. But that doesn't mean you get off scot-free. Because you're asserting that a God actually exists. You're asserting that the doctrine is true. You're asserting, basically, if your worldview is correct, you have no explanation for why this person was not aided by the God that they clearly, sincerely believe in. Or
right.
Why they're mentally fucking deficient in the first place. For what reason does your God allow people to be so mentally deficient that even in their sincerity of wanting to know and worship this God, that they come to the wrong conclusions and do harm to themselves and others? You don't get a pass on that. Your worldview is either true or it's not. And you don't get to go singling out and saying, well, you know, this guy. So not only are iron chariots more powerful than your God, but crazy people are more powerful than your God?
Obviously.
I'm more powerful than their God, as was shown on a Facebook conversation the other day where somebody said, well, it's not God's fault you're an atheist. You chose to be an atheist against God's will. Great. I can violate God's will.
I am
more powerful than your God. You know why? Because he doesn't fucking exist.
I actually...
Can we grow up yet?
Remember when we were talking to Ray Comfort and brought up the story from a previous nonprofits where the woman slit her own kid's throat believing that the end times were coming.
Right.
Right.
And Ray said something which was in a way kind of fair, which was basically that there are a lot of crazy people out there. And then he says, and they are drawn to the warm embrace of Christianity as if they were going to do that crazy stuff anyway before they came to Christianity. But... The idea that she ought to slit her kid's throat didn't come to her free of the religious stuff. It may not be stuff that the sane people among the religious would think of, but, I mean, it's completely consistent with biblical teaching as far as I can tell.
Yeah, there's nothing in the Bible about that I'm aware of about drawing a circle on your hand, putting a cross in it, and stabbing a pin through.
No.
But there is something in the Bible about circumcision. And there is something in the Bible about the penalty for children who grow up and fall away from God, and so that there is a rational internally consistent
reason
to prevent that from happening. There is admonition against certain acts that would support things like the Salem witch burnings. You don't get to pretend that the Crusades are not consistent with what your Bible actually says.
Right.
And so that's why you have moderate and liberal Christians now who are saying, as, for example, Father Jacobs, he said when we were debating, that I have this fundamentalist viewpoint on it because that's the way I was raised. He's right. I do. He doesn't believe in the Bible, the whole Bible, mm-hmm. as accurate. And Ray Comfort admitted on the show that there's lots of things in the Bible that he doesn't like or consider to be the Word of God. And so now, to me,
that's all got just their little magic decoder ring.
Yeah. Where's my decoder ring? Why? How come? Oh, no. Your decoder ring comes when you trust and follow God. Wow. You just really look up circular.
It all comes when you put your faith in SPAG. Self-projection as God.
Yeah. It's curious how God never seems to disagree with anybody, including the crazy people, which, you know,
right.
We can debate as to how who fits the crazy person category.
Yeah, it's like, you know, okay, so he disagrees with some of the stuff in the Bible. Does he disagree with some of the things God wants? Does he disagree with God?
No, he won't disagree with God. He'll just disagree that there are words in there that are supposedly from God.
So they must not be from God, but they're in the Bible. Okay.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, like all religious people, Ray Comfort really believes in Ray Comfort. I mean, you know,
that's it. Self-projection.
Believes that whatever he feels is morally right must be a message direct from God to him, or he wouldn't have these feelings.
So let's, since we're over the hour mark, we'll kind of wrap this up with a couple of quickies. The Atlanta Free Thought Society has a new building, and it used to be a church.
Uh-huh.
An idea that's been tossed around as the ACA looks for a building as well. But after 140 years, the building had been sold to developers, fallen into disrepair, and was in danger of being destroyed by vandals. But the Atlanta Free Thought Society got together and purchased it, and it is now the headquarters. It says Atlanta Free Thought Hall right above the doors that, you know, used to say. And they still have the original wood sign that says Collin Springs Primitive Baptist Church, built in 1866.
Primitive
Baptist Church.
Yeah.
Oh, well, accurate.
Yeah, so honest.
It's unexpectedly refreshing.
And there was one other thing that wasn't a news story, but that was positive and somewhat up. Oh, I remember what it was. Next Sunday is not only the American Atheist National Convention, but Easter, which we talked about a little bit at the beginning. And because I know there are some Christians out there listening, we've had a caller from named Mark from the Stone Church in here in Austin call in a couple times, and it's been, you know, good calls, popular feedback. And Sunday he called in while Russell was on,
and Tracy,
and made some statements. And I was watching the show while I cooked, and said, and I called in real quick to get a message to Russell to say, look, we can't keep letting this individual, who, from my point of view, is clearly mildly unstable and not an original thinker. I mean, when you ask him what he believes, he'll tell you. When you ask him why he believes it, not once did he reference anything other than, well, my pastor said, or if you listen to this sermon, you know, those types of things.
Right.
He keeps saying, we believe, my church believes. And
yeah. And he mentioned that, you know, his church would hate us for certain things, and that there is a significant problem within the church of their youth group or youth in their church watching our show and looking up to us, and this is causing some problems. And I said, you know, we can't keep – I'm happy to talk to Mark about what he believes and why, but I can't take his word for what's going on in the church. So, you know, tell him that we don't need him to keep bringing this stuff up about the youth in the church.
Right.
I'd rather hear from pastors of the church, parents of youth who have this problem, or some of the youth themselves, whatever, so that I can actually get it from the horse's mouth rather than from one person who is, you know, nice and generally pleasant, but obviously terrified and shaken every time he calls, giving me information. It's all hearsay. So I heard from one of the teaching pastors at Stone Church by email.
Yeah.
Who basically, in a nutshell, said that Mark doesn't speak for, on behalf of the church, which Mark didn't really claim to do, but some of the things he said were along those lines. And that, you know, the church doesn't hate us, that he actually watches the show and thinks we provide a valuable service. He and I are going to lunch on Tuesday, hopefully. It may have to be postponed because we're using one car, and she's driving the carpool this week. So it may not happen Tuesday. And then Beth and I are planning on probably going to Stone Church for a service on the 15th because there's no TV show on the 15th.
Wow, you're not trying for a Templeton prize, are you?
No.
Okay, good.
But
can I come if I'm free?
I don't care.
Next month?
Sure. I don't want, you know, a flood of atheists to come marching in the door and disrupt their service. But, you know, we can't even say for sure that it's going to be the 15th, but it may be. But as the Christian listeners go about their Easter celebrations, I'd like you to take a second to think about, from within your doctrine, what exactly is it that you're celebrating and commemorating here? Well, set aside the fact that, you know, Easter, right down to the very name, is stolen from other religious traditions. Set aside this absurd nonsense of rabbits laying eggs and things that that have become this secular, let's have fun with this and pass out chocolate. I'm talking about, from the standpoint of your church and your church's doctrine, what are you actually celebrating? In most Christian denominations, to the extent that they celebrate it at all, Easter is a commemoration of the resurrection of Jesus. We have no good reason to think anything like this has ever occurred, that the stories are accurate. And set all of that aside, what you're really doing is saying, I'm a fan of a God who's willing to torment and torture and crucify an individual, be him, be God or man, whatever.
Right.
To serve as a loophole for the rules that he created. It is a blood cult. You are worshiping the equivalent of a zombie. I don't care how offensive you find that. But more than that, you're not only worshiping and commemorating something that's patently absurd, but also disgusting. You're worshiping a God who created everything and made rules and doesn't seem to find any other way of circumventing these rules. I don't know why you would have to circumvent rules you created. You just changed them.
They're supposed to be perfect.
You know, I created a perfect world, perfect rules, so there can't be an error in the rules. But now if I'm going to make an exception to the rules, I would just change the rules. Although that would be an admission that I'm imperfect. So instead, I'm going to create a loophole, which is still an admission that I'm imperfect. And what's the best way for me to create that loophole? I've got it. A blood sacrifice. Because we're really just descendants of a magic cult that believes life is in the blood.
But then again, it's not really a blood sacrifice. Because what did Jesus lose?
Well,
nothing.
Yeah, there wasn't a sacrifice. you know, I mean, like we said before, you know, when Elvis died for our sins, he stayed dead.
But you like the blood.
And by the way, if somebody came to me and said, and I knew for certain, as within the theology, Jesus clearly would have known for certain, hey, I'm going to torture you and kill you, and then 3 days later you get to go on to rule the universe.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it'd be okay if you can prove, you know, absolutely
this
is true.
Yeah, if you convince me, sign me up.
You need some pretty solid evidence for that one.
But, I mean, you know, clearly if it was true, then Jesus was aware of the truth of this. Not really a sacrifice.
No.
I guess he sacrificed 2 days and a night, you know, or so. But it's not just absurd. It's immoral.
Yeah.
It is. It doesn't make any sense. And when you think about that and when you ask about it or when you try to shrug it off as, well, I realize this doesn't make sense to you, but that's because you're not looking it through the eyes guided by the Holy Spirit. Think about what you're actually saying, that to a regular rational mind, this doesn't make sense, but it only makes sense if you already presuppose the conditions of right. this religion. And then once you're all done and you've come up with whatever rationalization it is that allows you to continue to not only believe this, but to laud it as something valuable. Think about the people who don't do that and take a second to at least try to see why we not only think that you are demonstrating a severe lack of critical thinking skills, but that your brain has been so polluted by a dogma that you have taken something which by any other standard would be considered immoral and are now holding up as the greatest moral event in history. It is the ultimate sacrifice that wasn't a sacrifice. It was the ultimate demonstration of love, which has absolutely no recognizable corollary to what we think of as love. How duped do you have to be? How poisoned does your brain have to be before you can twist evil into good, non-sacrifice into sacrifice, absurdity into rationality? And if you've rationalized on this, well, God understands it and I don't, then you're admitting that you don't care to think for yourself, that you're believing it on terrible grounds, and that should be all any of you need to chuck this nonsense aside. And on that, happy Easter.
Yeah.
Happy Easter, everyone. Charlie Brown.
Right.
And I leave you with the true spirit of Easter, Dennis Lube.
So what? You don't believe in magical fairies? Well, that's too bad, because I'm Dennis Lube, along with Matt Dillahunty.
Yeah.
Russell Glasser.
Chirp.
And Beth Presswood.
Bye.
And we'll be back in a week with another episode once it's made law that you'll have to believe in fairies. And you'll have to like Peter Cottontail or be exiled from our magical kingdom. So there.
Fairies chirp, right?
And actually, we won't be back in 1 week because I'll be out of town for the convention. I completely ruined your exit.
You ruined my exit.
2 weeks. Here's the music.
And everything else he says is true.
King of Rabbit Town.
Look at Peter Cottontail
hopping down the bunny trail,
hippity hopping on his merry way.
Peter Cottontail, he's the king of Bunnyland, 'cause his eyes are shiny and he can spot the wolf a mile away.